Thanks for taking the time to download this BBC Radio 5 Live podcast. To search for other podcasts you might like, click bbc.co.uk/5live, where you'll also find our terms of use. Darren Campbell's Road to Rio
on 5Live.
And welcome to Darren Campbell's Road to Rio. Last time we spoke, we heard some emotional stories from paracyclist David Smith, who was literally fighting for his life, and from boxer Tony Bellew on his part of the new Rocky film. But since then, a cloud has hung over the Olympic Games and specifically athletics.
Yes, Russia has been found to be complicit in helping its athletes to dope. The former IAAF president Lamin Diak is alleged to have turned a blind eye at best. So where are we now? Over the next hour, we'll hear how the new president, Seb Coe, has handled the situation, whether WADA or the IAAF deserve any praise. We'll find out what drugs athletes are taking today and how they avoid being caught. Victor Conti served time for helping athletes such as Dwayne Chambers and Marion Jones cheat, and he'll join us on the road to Rio. But it's not all doom and gloom. We finish off today's show by catching up with sprint 110-metre hurdler Aries Merritt, Olympic champ, world record holder. He had a kidney transplant just days after winning bronze at the World Championships.
Well, joining Darren this evening, we have 11-time Paralympic gold medalist who broke 30 world records, Baroness Tanny Gray-Thompson. Evening, Tanny.
Good evening.
And David Walsh, chief sports writer from the Sunday Times. Good evening to you, David.
Good evening, Eleanor.
Now, before we talk more about subjects, which I know, David, you have a great interest in, and Darren too, Tanny, before we get into that, a quick word on Oscar Pistorius, who's been found guilty of murder today after his conviction for manslaughter was overturned. Minimum sentence for murder being 15 years in South Africa. It's a tragic story for all involved, particularly for Reeva Steenkamp and her family. But that's it for Oscar Pistorius as far as athletics is concerned.
Yeah, it is. It ends up splitting into two stories almost, because so many people keep saying, well, what does it mean for the Paralympic movement? And that's just actually completely inconsequential, really. You know, there's been a legal process. I feel slightly voyeuristic watching how this is unfolded. But I think it highlights, actually, a lot of issues around women's domestic violence, that there was a hashtag which was her name was Reeva, because she was constantly referred to just as Oscar's girlfriend. As kind of a mum, I hope that June and her dad Barry will find some peace out of this. On the Paralympic side, I mean, this sounds really harsh, but people leave sport all the time for different reasons. You know, they retire, they're injured, they're not selected. Sport moves on, and you know, the Paralympic movement is strong enough to deal with an athlete leaving. And that might sound really tough, but that's the way sport is.
Well, let's talk about the challenges facing the wider world of athletics, particularly the doping scandal. And it's been an eventful few weeks, as we've been hearing. Russian athletics have been found to be non-compliant with WADA's code of practice. That means if they don't clean up their act, they could miss the Olympics. Former IAAF President Lamin Diak is being investigated by French police over cover-ups of failed drugs tests and taking bribes. Seb Coe has taken over the presidency, but then he was accused on Channel 4 News of being either asleep on the job or corrupt for not knowing what was going on at the IAAF. He then gave up his contract with Nike after controversy over the awarding of the World Championships to Eugene, where the sportswear company are based. Well, yesterday, Coe was called to appear before the Culture, Media and Sports Select Committee and was grilled on all of the above. And as an aside to that, Kenya Athletics have suspended three top officials for the misappropriation of funds. And today, Italy called for 26 of its athletes to be banned for missing drugs tests. It's a mess, Darren, isn't it?
It's a big mess. We spoke after we initially heard everything with regards to Russia, and you know, my feeling was then, this is just the beginning. I think it's important, and I've always said this, once it does start, it's important that we get everything out. With regards to Lord Coe, he is trying to, I believe, do the right thing, but unfortunately, there are a lot of eyes on him at this moment in time. Everything that he does is under the microscope, and questions will always be asked, not necessarily because of what he's done, but because of what happened before he actually became president. As vice president, people will say, well, hold on, you were vice president, so you didn't know anything that was going on. Look, there are rumours. And for me, I think if he had heard anything, even if it was just a rumour, now would be the time to say, look, I did hear things. I did maybe try and do my own investigations, but I couldn't find out anything. I just feel to say, I never heard anything. I think,
I was a bit busy with the Olympics.
Yeah, it's so then as a vice president, you didn't know what was going on with the IAAF, so then maybe you shouldn't have taken on two roles. So look, I don't want to chastise Lord Coe because I think he will try and do the right thing. I think that's important. But the sport is at a place now where the right thing will happen regardless of who's in charge, because everybody is watching, which means the sport has to clean itself. It won't be enough that, okay, we'll let that go and we'll be totally focused on this issue. No, every single thing that has occurred, every single question that needs to be answered, now is the time. And I did say it's not just the Russians. And as we're finding out, there are other nations involved. You know, my hope is that our nation aren't involved. I don't believe it is. Nobody from our sport has ever, as I say, from a higher level, tried to get me involved in any doping things. I've always said about the one physio when I was 19 years old. But that was the one and only time that somebody from the UK approached me with regards to drugs. So
what you're saying is that you're not saying that there are no British athletes who aren't clean. You're saying that there is no institutionalised doping,
cover-up or protection or anything like that. I wouldn't believe it's on a big scale like we're hearing. I think it's 30, is it, Italian athletes, potentially?
26 is the figure we've got. David, now you were instrumental in exposing Lance Armstrong's cheating and the state that cycling was in then. Is it comparable to where athletics is now?
Yes, Eleanor, it is comparable. Comparable in the sense that cycling got to where it arrived at with Lance Armstrong because people who might otherwise have been considered, you know, good people, good administrators, choose to look the other way. And I think we've seen a lot of that in the IAAF. I think Seb Coe is a prime example of somebody who should have known. I mean, it's understandable that when Seb was organising the London Olympics that he became totally focused on that. I get that. I have no difficulty with that. I understand, too, that being vice president of the IAAF is a largely ceremonial role. It doesn't have any executive powers. You go to a few meetings and you're not really that active in the running of the organisation. I accept that. What I don't accept and what I don't understand is that when Seb got involved in running for the presidency of the IAAF, a documentary was broadcast in Germany on the 3rd of December last year. This was a documentary that really offered us the A to Z of what was going on in Russia. It was compelling viewing. Anybody who loved athletics was going to watch that and say, I wonder what they've got. Now, as soon as it was over, you knew they had a lot and you knew that the World Anti-Doping Agency was going to have to react. I think it was about 8 days later that the World Anti-Doping Agency set up its independent commission under Dick Pound to investigate. Now, at that time, Seb wasn't running the London Olympics. He was vice president of the IAAF. He was intending to become president if he could. Now, in my eyes, he had an absolute responsibility to say, what have those Germans got? What have they come up with? At this very time, Hajo Seppel, the journalist, the investigative journalist who's made the documentary, is waiting in the lobby of a hotel in Monaco because Seb has agreed to speak with him. The guy waits for 3 hours. Seb comes and says, I'm not going to talk to you. The guy comes back the next morning because he's told by Mike Lee, Seb's man, come back in the morning, we'll do it. He waits 2 hours the following morning. Seb refuses to talk to him. Why? Why would Seb say, I don't want to talk to this guy? This is the guy who's done the documentary, who knows what's going on in Russia. If Seb hadn't seen the documentary, he now has an opportunity to speak to the guy who made the documentary. He deliberately didn't speak to him for whatever reasons. And then he ends up a year later saying he was shocked by revelations that were broadcast on television on a year before. And to me, that was a dereliction of his duty as a lover of athletics, as a vice president of the IAAF, and just as somebody who you would expect to be champion the cause of clean athletes.
Tani, what do you think?
Yeah,
where do you start?
it's almost impossible, isn't it? Because I think if you look at any governance issue around IAAF, they're an absolute mess. And, you know, there's rumour speculation about backhanders and, you know, the drugs. And you kind of need some proof. I think for me, you know, it's really easy for me to sit here. You know, Seb should have spoken to the guys. I think if you've asked somebody to meet you, you should just listen to what they say. You can spend half an hour talking to them. You don't have to say anything back. You don't have to say anything in return. I mean, I think there's some really serious questions around WADA, about their testing. I mean, I think it just goes to prove that you can't allow national federations to have anything to do with penalising and protecting the athletes. And I've got a really quite a hardline stance on drug cheats. I would take them out of the sport forever. Where I have a teeny bit of sympathy for the Russians is that this wouldn't have been their choice. It would have been do it or else.
Yeah.
You know, do it or a prison camp or your family are in a prison. You know, so
it's a bit of a difficult situation when it comes.
Yeah,
to
if I
athletes,
was presented with that choice, I know what I would do to protect your family. But this goes much wider. You know, I think now is the point that athletics has to get all the dirty washing out, because if you don't do it now, there isn't going to be that trust in the sport.
You won't get
a
second chance. That's always been my thing. Once it starts to come out, let's get it all out, because SEBCO won't be able to go, right, the sport's clean, and then we have an issue 2 months later. People aren't going to forgive that.
Yeah, Darren, just one point on something, Tani. It's not fair to say, go with the program or prison camp. In Russia, how it operates is that they say to you, this is what we think you have to do. If you don't do it, you return to normal life and they get somebody else to do it. I mean, it's not like you get sent to a prison camp, and that's unfair. My feeling about what Seb is going to do now, when he appeared for 3 hours yesterday before the select committee and he answered questions, the question of Qatar getting the 2019 World Championships came up. And there was, and Seb was asked, did he think there might have been corruption involved in that or wrongdoing involved in giving that? Because there is an allegation out there that the former president's son, Papa Masata Diak, received $3.5 million bribe. Seb said he didn't know if there was corruption involved. And then he was asked, well, are you going to investigate it? And in that kind of roundabout way that he sometimes adopts, where he doesn't answer the question directly, he indicated that no, they weren't going to investigate it. Now, Darren is absolutely right when he says you actually have to investigate everything. And it's no good to say, well, I wasn't president when that decision was made, therefore it doesn't matter who's president. If wrongdoing was done, and there's a chance to investigate it, you investigate it.
So it's got to be full disclosure.
Totally. And somebody in the IAAF Ethics Commission has got to be saying we're investigating Qatar getting the 2019 World Championships. We've got to find out who voted for them and perhaps find out why they voted for the championships to be in Doha.
Yeah, I'm just not sure where you start, though, with some of it. That's, if you're investigated. I mean, I agree, it has to be investigated, but there's so much on the plate of athletics at the moment.
Yeah, but Seb's coming across like a politician. Now, we know he is a politician and he can be a politician, but at this moment in time, when we're talking about saving athletics, athletics, the whole sport, by the way, there's no time for politics. And You can't decide, look, everything needs to be answered, but then he can go, OK, well, let me deal with this first situation and then I'll deal with this next one. You can't go, I'm not going to investigate that one.
I mean, I think you have to look at
this. Yeah, because how are you going to get to the bottom of who else was involved?
Yeah.
We've got maybe one or two names, but there's certain things that have gone on. One person can't activate that. It has to come down the chain. Yeah. It has to come down the chain. So you have to know who else is involved. So if you don't investigate it, have you rid the IAAF of all the poison that's inside? Or have you just gone, okay, well, we've got rid of the top people that made decisions. I'm now making decisions, so everything's okay.
Well, you look at the bloodletting that's going on in FIFA at the moment, and the fact that there have been all these new charges being brought. Do you want to see that happen?
This is the problem.
Just cut out however much it takes of the organisation.
Well, we've seen the example with FIFA where it drags on and on and on and on, because each time somebody will go, OK, our house is clean now. and something else will come out.
Mm. It's like trying to get rid of mice. They keep reappearing under different
called rent-a-kill. It's like, you know, you just can't. And that's what's occurring. So we go, OK, 6 months, FIFA are OK again. Oh, no, they're not. Look, something else is coming out. I don't want to see athletics go through that. Let's go through it once. Let's all collectively go through it once. Let's not hide away, because the public, the volunteers, the people maybe driving home this evening who have come are coming from the athletic stadium, having coached some young kids who've got dreams and aspirations of representing Great Britain at the Olympic Games, you know, we have to do it for them. It's okay me hearing Seb say in the parliament, you know, I remember my coach. You know, if you remember all of these things, cut the politician thing. I've got no problem with supporting Seb if he cuts the politician thing. This is heart and soul. This is everything that a lot of us have built our careers and lives on. So we want to save it. We haven't got the power to save it, but we can't allow people to mess around in trying to save it.
Darren, you speak so passionately about trying to save your sport. And David, I know that this goes to the heart of something that you wrote about in the Sunday Times this weekend, because, as you said, this all kicked off because of the Sunday Times investigation and the ARD documentary that was based on the evidence of two Russian whistleblowers, Vitaly and Yulia Stepanov. Remind us, David, who Yulia and Vitaly are and what happened to them.
Yeah, an incredible story. It's a story that if somebody were to write a novel and based it on the lives of Vitaly and Yulia Stepanov, nobody would believe it. I mean, Vitaly was a guy who started working for the Russian Anti-Doping Agency in the year it was set up, 2008. And it was, for him, it was the dream job, because he was a decent runner, you know, 2:40 marathons, but was addicted to running, loved athletics, wanted Russia's athletes to compete clean. So it was the dream job for him. He soon realized in the Russian Anti-Doping Agency that actually the RUSADA, the Anti-Doping Agency, wasn't doing its job. He would turn up to test athletes and he would be told, well, you can't test this one and this one and this one. He said, I can and I will. And he was offered bribes and he turned them down, and he's doing everything straight. And after, I think it was 2 years in the Russian Anti-Doping Agency, he's convinced that there's a lot going on that's not right. He goes to an outreach program at Russian National Championships, where he's kind of trying to convince athletes to learn about anti-doping and to respect it. And a young woman comes in who's an 800-meter runner, Yulia Russinova, and she's looking for one of the gifts you get if you complete a questionnaire. And they get talking and they hit it off well, and they set up a date. And on their first night, on their first date, they're in a restaurant, and Vitaly says, you know, obviously I work for the Russian Anti-Doping Agency, and I think there's a lot going on that, you know, people are doing stuff in relation to doping. And she says to him, you know nothing. And he says, what do you mean? And she says, this is the system. Unless you dope, you can't compete. Everybody does it. It's not just Russia. There's other countries as well. But we have to do it. Our coaches give us the anabolic steroids. They give us EPO. They tell us what to do. The Sergei Portugalov, the chief medical officer for the federation and for other federations, he organizes our pharmacological preparation. Alexei Melnikov, all these guys are banned now. So, you know, don't worry. Don't worry about what I'm saying. It's 100% verified. Melnikov, the head coach, is advising us on doping, and all our coaches are basically involved with the program. And he's shocked. And they get married 2 months later. I mean, she's doping and he's this huge anti-doping crusader. She eventually is sanctioned for a biological passport infringement, gets a 2-year ban. But even before then, she's kind of switched sides. At the time she's doping, she's giving Vitaly all the information about her doping, and he's sending that in emails to the World Anti-Doping Agency, because there's nobody in Russia he can complain to, because everybody in Russia who's high up is part of the system. So in 2010, he starts emailing the World Anti-Doping Agency. And 5 years pass, basically, before anything is done about this, which makes you wonder about the World Anti-Doping Agency. I mean, their view was that they didn't feel they had the authority to go into Russia and sort things out. So what they did in the end was they connected Vitaly and Yulia with Hayo Seppel, the German investigative journalist. And they did that for the purpose of, if Hayo's documentary came out and it was very good and it had all the detail of what was going on with the evidence, the secretly taped conversations, the videos, the documents, that would create pressure to force WADA to investigate. And it's terrible that WADA needed that kind of journalistic stroke public pressure, which is what happened. The pressure came, the independent commission was set up, and we are now at the point of having got the first part of the independent report. Mm-hmm. But through all of this, I mean, 10 days before the documentary was aired in Germany on the 3rd of December, Hayo and Yulia had to leave Russia because it wouldn't have been a safe place for them. There's been death threats on social media. There's been all kinds of other threats. So they're now living in hiding and have been for more than 12 months. And it seems just bewildering to me that the president of the IAAF, Seb Coe, hasn't sent a one-line email or made a 10-second phone call. So Craig Reedy, the president of the World Anti-Doping Agency, hasn't sent one email to Vitaly Stepanov and said, look, I'm president of the World Anti-Doping Agency, the single most important figure in the world of anti-doping. And I think what you've done is heroic. You've done a great job for sport in general and for athletics in particular. Well done. Mm. He's had the time. Just let me finish this. He's had the time and the intonation to send a letter of comfort, it was called, or an email of comfort, to Vitaly Mutko, the Russian sports minister, saying that I hope all of this investigation that WADA are doing isn't going to affect our personal relationship. I mean, can you fathom that?
Yeah. Well, let's hear what Lord Coe had to say yesterday. As we said, he was in front of the Culture, Media and Sports Select Committee, and specifically on that issue of not meeting Vitaly and Yulia Stepanov. This is what he told the Select Committee yesterday.
Because there were four independent investigations taking place at that time, and as I said earlier, I don't remotely dismiss the whistleblowing efforts that they have. I commend them.
Why haven't you taken someone like a Vitaly Stepanov and actually praised him as a kind of courageous whistleblower? He's a rather heroic figure, isn't he, in a way, because he's actually opened up an extraordinary kind of cesspit of corruption.
I actually have said that, and if you would like me to say it again today, I'm very happy to. You know, whistleblowing comes with human cost.
Yeah.
And there are people in my own organisation that have done that, and there are people from outside the organisation that have done that at considerable personal risk.
So he's acknowledging the cost that the Stepanovs have put themselves at.
Politician, just say it.
Well, Darren and Tani, I mean, you were listening to what David was telling us, describing the story of Yulia and
I have to say,
shaking your heads.
I have to say, you know, I've read the article, and I would recommend that anybody who cares about sport, please go and read that article in the Sunday Times, because we're talking about two selfless people who have put the sport before their own safety. They've got a young child. I think the child's maybe 2 years old. They've had to leave Russia. They now live in hiding, all for the sport. And when you read the article, he says he just wants to make a difference. And why can't people just do the right thing? You know, it's about aspirations. It's about dreams. That's for me, that's why people get involved in sport from a young age, because you have this aspiration, something's inspired you, and you believe that, okay, maybe I can go out and do it too. What we found out over the last year, that all these dreams really aren't a reality. And without these two people, we still wouldn't know. So for Seb Coe to not even just send, because it's okay going, what do you want me to do? Thank them again. Okay, well, do you know if they've got a TV and they can hear what you're saying? To send an email just saying thank you, that will mean the world to them, because they're living a life of secrecy right now.
And you say politics, it's politics. He's a politician. I mean, Tani, you know, you're Baron. Let's not forget it. You're Baroness.
I do politics now.
You do politics. Yeah. Is it slightly naive to say you've got to take the politics out of it? Because, I mean, as David said, we shake our heads when we hear that Craig Greedy thought it was more important to get in touch with the head of the Russian sports minister than it was to talk to the Stepanovs. Is that just the way the system works sometimes?
It's the way it works. Should it be the way it works? No. I mean, I think it's a real challenge because as an ex-athlete, you want WADA to be the gatekeeper, the protection, the people who are there who are fighting for clean athletes. They should be supporting these guys. They should be making sure they've got enough money to live on. They will have lost everything. They won't have any contact with them. You know, their life will just never, ever be the same again. And actually, I'm disappointed, quite disgusted, actually, that WADA need a TV programme to expose some of those things. They haven't got the guts to go in and say, we need to do this differently. So they've got a huge number of questions. And will this encourage another athlete to whistleblow? Absolutely not. You look at, you know, athlete contracts they have with their sports. They're so punitive. They're not allowed to say anything that is any way not, you know, hugely complimentary about the sport. This will not encourage people to be open because they've got so much to lose. They've got the sporting career. They've got the livelihood. They've got the family. Unless we change some of that, we're not going to find out exactly what people are doing, what they're taking. Because actually, the testing procedures are always playing catch up. You know, it's you need the people to whistleblow to admit what they were taking so they can develop a test for it.
I actually met somebody a couple of months ago who basically came to me. This is after, I don't know, however many years of not doing the lap of honour, and said, oh, you know, you're really against drugs, and there's now, I'm the person who, you know, you can talk to about anything that's going on. And I looked at him and went, I don't know what's going on now in the sport. He went, well, look, if you ever hear anything, you know, phone me. And I just think...
Is that the intelligent test? Is that it?
Yeah, that was
you,
it.
You kind of hope it's more than that, don't you, really?
Yeah, I was like, okay, great.
We'll talk more about anti-doping, about what WADA needs to do, what the IAAF need to do to take a strong stance on doping. And we'll speak to Victor Conte as well, who, of course, knows all about it from the inside and then now as an anti-doping campaigner as well. David Walsh is with us. But a word before we move on about the whole Nike issue and the fact that Eugene has got the World Championships. Lord Coe has given up his link with Nike. Now he's given up his contract. But are we satisfied that that will be the end of that?
I think the thing that you've got to say about Seb and the Nike thing was that it was a dreadful reflection on his ability to judge a situation. He said from the beginning there was no conflict of interest. He didn't understand that in matters like this, perception is just as important as reality. How could we be confident that he would make decisions that were independent of Nike's best interests when he's being paid £100,000 a year? Nike had been, you know, had a very big interest in Eugene being given the 2021 World Championships, and then we hear they were given it without a ballot, and when there was another bidder that was desperate to get in there and put its case to the IAAF council. And the thing about Seb, and I don't know, it's like somebody said to him at the beginning of his political career, Seb, you must never admit a mistake. No matter how wrong you are, don't say you were wrong. And I think people have really grown tired of listening to him refusing to say, I got it wrong. He got it wrong about Nike. He got it wrong about what was going on in the IAAF. He's got it wrong about a ton of things. But He has lacked the humility to come and say, I got it wrong. And, you know, if he did that, he would get some people on his side and some people would say, OK, he's admitted he was wrong there. Give him a chance now to put it right. But it's difficult to be empathetic with a man who sees that who refuses to see that he's made some important mistakes.
Tani, you know Seb very well. You've known him for many years, as we all have. Do you agree with David?
He should have stepped away from the Nike deal straight away. You know, there's the odd thing with IAAF, it's not a paid job, is it? You know, some of those things have to be sorted as well. You know, there's a bit of hindsight. But, you know, he's a smart guy. What I would say is, with all this stuff, I think David's absolutely right. You know, just holding your hands up and saying, I got it wrong, you know, and this is what I should have done is not a bad thing to do. Right now, I would prefer Seb to be running IAAF. than a whole other lot of people who could be running it. So, you know, it's maybe better the devil you know than you don't. But you know,
that's really the problem, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's
else?
Really the
if
problem.
He goes,
yes, that's really the
there's
problem.
There's a whole pile of other people from different countries. I wouldn't be convinced that they would clean the sport up.
And that's why it was surprising. And this is what I mean about the politician side. You should know, Seb should know. At the point where the media, journalists, everybody's bringing up this Nike conflict of interest, whether he thinks it is or not, everybody else does think it is. So you have to step away. Now, I believe with all the pressure that's on the president of the IAAF, you should get paid. You should get paid. Why should you do it for free? Why should you take all the flack, all that pressure, all that abuse for free? Yeah, there's love of the sport, but there's also being looked after for what you do. So I get that. And Dave is exactly right. For me, I want to see the human side. When I talk about the politician, just show me the human side. Why? Because I don't know a perfect person in the world. We all make mistakes. And the beauty for Seb Coe is it wasn't on your watch. So anything that happened before, OK, we can say it wasn't on your watch. So you can apologise. There's nothing wrong with apologising.
Darren Campbell's Road to Rio. On 5 Live.
The chair of the Independent Commission has made it clear in the report and that this is not simply about Russia and it's not simply about athletics.
Welcome back to Darren Campbell's Road to Rio. Now, that was Lord Seb Coe speaking yesterday, highlighting the fight against doping and that it's a bigger problem than just in athletics. With me in the studio is Darren Campbell, of course, 11 times Paralympic gold medalist. Baroness Tanny Gray-Thompson is with us as well. David Walsh from the Sunday Times, who was with us for the first half hour of the programme, has had to go, but he gave us a great contribution, and thank you, David, for that as well. Now, let's talk to Victor Conte. He set up and ran Balco. It was involved in one of the biggest drug scandals in sport. It was found to have supplied performance-enhancing drugs to athletes such as Dwayne Chambers and Marion Jones, as well as baseball star Barry Bonds. Victor spent time in prison as a result. Joins us live now on the road to Rio. Hello, Victor.
Well, hello there, and thank you very much for having me. There's certainly a lot to talk about in the world of athletics.
It certainly is. You have turned things around, as we said before, but how big a problem is athletics facing right now?
Well, it's a massive problem, and I think the highest and best use of what I have to say may be to quickly summarize my role as a whistleblower after I did spend time in prison. I initially met on three different occasions with USADA, and I gave them a tremendous amount of information, including reviewing over 3,000 pages of documents that they confiscated during the infamous raid. And I advised them that their testing was not effective, in part because the majority of the funds were being spent testing in-competition samples as opposed to out-of-competition samples, which is where the athletes are using these drugs. And the strange thing happened. I also reviewed the IAAF. This was back in 2007. And I reviewed the statistics on the IAAF website as well. And something very interesting, in fact, this is on my website now for people that would like to review this. But, you know, I told them that in Beijing in 2008, that the athletes would be using these drugs in conjunction with an intensive weight training program in the October, November, December, January period, the fourth quarter before. And that particular year, I'd noticed that USADA here in the United States did about 1,200 tests the first quarter and the second quarter and the third quarter. And then the fourth quarter, they dropped down and did 50% the number of tests. And I looked at the IAAF website and I found the same thing. They had done about 600 tests each quarter. And here comes the fourth quarter when, you know, the fish are biting, so to speak. And that's the time that there should be more target testing. And they also reduced the amount of testing by 50%. So thereafter, I got a request from UKA through Dwayne Chambers to write a letter to them, you know, explaining his program in detail and what drugs he was using and why he was using those drugs. And then someone at BBC also asked me to write an open letter to WADA, kind of the Conte prescription for success and what my idea should be. Well, thereafter, I was contacted by Dick Pound, and he asked me to fly to New York to meet him, which I did. And this was December 12th of 2007. Right after that, 2 weeks later, he was scheduled to step down, and John Fahey took over as the chairman from Australia. And let me say at this point, I'm going to explain why in a moment, but I think he did a horrible disservice as the leader to the anti-doping movement, as the leader of WADA. And here's basically what happened. I spent 3.5 hours in New York with Dick Pound. There was another lawyer there, and they transcribed everything that I said. I told them about people that were distributing drugs in Jamaica, what was going on there, specific names, addresses, phone numbers. I told them about a network of athletes through an agent, about 25 track athletes. This was in Austria, and they were testing samples, and I was actually getting this data from the WADA accredited lab in Budapest, Hungary. So they knew who the athletes were. They knew who the agent was who was submitting this. I gave them all sorts of information. And then after that meeting, of course, Dick Pound stepped down. And then when John Fahey took over, he publicly said, I choose to get my information from medical doctors, not from a convicted felon. Well, it took about 3 years thereafter for me to actually get a hold of one of the designer injectable substances from this group that was operating in Austria. And in fact, Bernhard Kohl actually tested positive for this, but this came out in an Italian court. It was something called AMTH2. And it was about 3 years before I could actually get somebody to send a sample of this designer injectable drug to Dick Pound. And he took this to Christiane Ott at the lab over there, and there was several communications, and eventually the communication with the director of science, Dr. Olivier Rabin, and so on. And so once I had got the actual sample, I went back to Dick Pound and I said, now what I would like you to do for me is please go back and get the notes from our meeting, the minutes of our meeting, and you will see that I told you about all these specific things and now have actually delivered the substance, and WADA has actually done nothing, and I do not understand why. Mm. He called me back a few days later, and he said that he had talked to David Howman and others at WADA, and they had told him that the minutes from our meeting had been destroyed.
Yeah, that really doesn't surprise us with everything that's going on now. But Victor, what I would like to know, what drugs are people taking now and how are they beating the tests?
Well, they're specifically using something called IGF-1 long R3. And it's a very powerful, it's a combination of insulin and growth hormone. It's used in micrograms and not milligrams, but it certainly has anabolic effects. And they really do not have a test for it at this point in time. The test they have for growth hormone is relatively weak. The claims that they make about it being effective are simply not the case, in my opinion. But the only way that they can detect this would be fluctuations over a period of time in a biological passport setting with multiple data. It would probably take them 6 months or longer to come up with a positive test. So this is stuff that is so inexpensive. You can buy it for $65 a bottle online. They do it in 40-day cycles, 100 micrograms a day. This costs under $200, and they don't have any tests for it. And my understanding from talking to lots of people in lots of different sports is there's a rampant use of this substance out there and not being detected by the WADA testers.
What would you do to clean the sport if you were given the opportunity?
Well, one of the things would be to bring out the truth. And I suggested this to Dick Pound, and that was, let's start. We know the issues that happened in Jamaica, that there was basically no testing or one single test, they claim, for the 5 months leading up to the Olympic Games in London in 2012. I suggested that they go back and they collect these frozen samples from some of the previous championships. And I know recently they said, well, they don't save them for longer than 90 days for individual meets and so on. But there are samples available. And because a lot of people don't realize that they can detect undetectable anabolic steroids, new species that come out. They use a mass spectrogram fragmentation pattern, and if it's even close, they change the rule now, where if it's just similar, with no science to support it, but just similar in structure to testosterone, they can bring a positive charge. So what that means is, everybody went old school. They're now back, and I told this to Dick Pound and Christy Aniot back in before the Winter Olympics in Vancouver in 2010, that they were microdosing with testosterone. And these, unless they use the carbon isotope ratio test, you can use creams and gels and other form orals, and these will clear and be back down below the 4-to-1 TE ratio that's allowable in a matter of 6 hours.
And this is so something the first that came out of the Panorama documentary, isn't it? Victor, can I come back to you just a second?
Sure, you can.
And we'll get your prescription, as it were, for the IAAF very shortly. Quickly, though, let's go to the Modeski Stadium, because news of a goal from Alistair Bruce Ball.
A 90th minute goal for QPR. They lead Reading by the goal to nil, headed in by their captain Ned Amanua. Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank made a good decision not to come tonight. It's been a pretty terrible game. He's set to be named the new QPR boss very soon, and he could be taking over on the back of two straight wins. Reading 0, QPR 1. We're in injury time.
Thanks, Ali. So we were talking, Victor, about the fact that microdosing is what is happening now, that it's not all about large quantities of drugs in the system. It can be a small amount which can make enough of a difference on the day to actually enhance the performance. So how do you combat that?
Well, you, in terms of testosterone, you would specifically use the carbon isotope ratio test, and you would have to target test with this. The TE ratio test is so easy to fly under the radar and circumvent this. Everybody knows this. There was an example. I'll just give you something that people generally don't know. There are people, athletes, that take it's called Testopel. It's a testosterone pellet, and they can make a little incision in their buttocks. They insert this. It's about the size of a piece of rice, and it will release about double the concentration. So daily we make about 50 milligrams of testosterone, so this is approximately 7 milligrams a day. They can double your testosterone level and have it circulating at twice the amount and still be below the 4-to-1 ratio, and all they do is go to the doctor every 4 months and take the old pellet out and put a new one in, like changing the oil in your car. Then they will not detect it unless they do this carbon isotope ratio test that can differentiate between synthetic and endogenous testosterone. So there are things they can do. The cheaters are so far ahead of the testers that they can't catch them, and we might as well give up. That's not true. There's a lot of things that could be done and implemented to more effectively reduce the use of PEDs. I just think overall there's a lack of a genuine interest by all parties concerned, from the top to the bottom, including WADA and even the IOC, to catch these athletes, because in short, it's bad for business.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with that. One burning question for me, Victor, is what has made you decide to fight for the other side?
Well, I think when I realized how reckless that I was being, and I hadn't thought through the fact that my family and other friends and those around me, the devastating damage that I did to them, and they didn't cheat, they didn't lie, they didn't do wrong things, and I thought, you know, back in the day that I was a big boy, and if I got in trouble, that I would deal with the consequences, and I had no idea how damaging and painful that it would be to all those around me. So it wasn't until I was in a prison camp and I looked in the eyes of my family and I saw the tears and the pain that I realized that I need to do everything I can to try to help to change things. And it's a massive task, and it will take a collective effort, and I'm just trying to do what I can.
Mm. Superb. And in your opinion, I know you helped the likes of Dwayne Chambers, and obviously you know how his life has been destroyed. Do you think agents, coaches also need to take some responsibility, that sometimes it's not just the young athletes?
You're absolutely correct. It's a whole network. It's a whole team. If the athlete, you know, knows about it, the coach knows about it, the nutritionist knows about it, the sport support team, it's a network. It takes all of the above. And it really is, you know, we haven't even talked about today, or I haven't heard anybody bring up now that we're really realizing how rampant the use of PEDs is, what's another, just a brief point, is how unfair it is to make today's athletes have to compete with some of these records in the 100 meters, your event, 200 meters for women, as an example, because anabolic steroids are much more powerful for women than they are for men. But I believe the majority of these records, Olympic and World Championship records for females, were achieved by athletes using performance-enhancing drugs. And the athletes today, let's take the 47.60 for the 400 meters, they can't get anywhere near that more than 30 years later.
It's so interesting.
It's a difficult situation.
Tanya, that's a very good point, isn't it? Should those records just be wiped off the record books now?
There's a big part of me that says yes, but, you know, it's figuring out which ones are right and which ones are wrong, and where do you start and how many times do you do that? But, you know, Victor was saying, and Darren as well, about, you know, athletes don't do this on their own. You know, you need people who really understand how all this stuff works. And, you know, for me, I think it's the athletes, the coaches, everybody who's involved should be taken out of the sport. You know, all the time it's the athletes who get named and shamed and they're taken out. Very rarely do the coaches lose their position, and they're the ones who help the athletes do it. So I think it just, WADA just has to look so much wider in terms of what it's doing to clean the sport up.
And Victor, very quick final word from you. We've heard people say it's not just Russia, it's not just athletics. Briefly, without naming specific names, what countries do you think are the worst offenders, and other sports?
Throughout history, it's been here in the United States. It's been in the Bahamas. It's been in Jamaica. These are my opinions. China. I think it's a lot. And specifically, all these in the last two Olympics, these sprint records coming out of Jamaica, I believe that they had state-sponsored doping there for a number of years. And Renee Ann Shirley, that became the whistleblower that did that interview with Sports Illustrated, as you know, I believe that Herb Elliott, who was there as the medical doctor, was in on this, and the athletes knew that they weren't going to be tested for 5 months before the Berlin Olympics. WADA knew that they weren't being tested. The question is, why didn't they do anything about it?
Victor, it's fascinating to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. And listen, if you've been listening to The Road to Rio this evening and feeling a bit gloomy about sport and about life in general, so let's finish by restoring just a bit of faith in humankind. Let's speak to an Olympic champion and world record holder.
The 110-metre hurdle final. And a very good start from Deron Robles. He's just got a little lead, but here comes Merritt. Merritt's now forging ahead, and it's Merritt going away. Robles pulls up. Richardson is in second place, and it's going to be Parchman. Goal for Merritt! 12.94.
Well, that was Aries Merritt winning the 110 metres hurdles at the London Olympics. He then went on to win bronze at last year's World Championships. 4 days later, he was on the operating table having a kidney transplant, and he joins us now. Good evening to you.
Hello.
Lovely to talk to you. When did you find out that you were ill? When did you know that you were going to have a kidney transplant?
I found out I was ill in 2013 after the World Championships in Moscow, but I didn't know I would need a kidney transplant until 2015, so this year at some point.
And how was it making you feel? What made you go and check what was going on with your body? Because athletes are quite sensitive with regards to their bodies.
Well, in 2013, when I checked myself into the ER, they told me I had kidney failure, and they were trying to do everything in their power to stop me from losing my kidneys. And so I was undergoing a lot of tests and treatment. And so all of 2014, you didn't see me compete until the second half of the circuit. So I didn't run indoor, and I did run first half of the season. And then I came back and I ran the latter half, and I didn't run particularly quick. I ran like 13:20 something, which is okay. It's not the best of, or what I can do anyways. And then next year, which is this year, everything seemed to be going well, but I knew that something was wrong with me. I mean, my training was completely remedial. Like, I couldn't do anything, any kind of tempo work without having to take long amounts of recovery.
Right.
It was just really tough.
And at any point, did you think, okay, maybe I should not go to the World Championships in Beijing?
Well, my doctor's advised against it because...
I know you were against it.
Yeah, my doctors have advised against it. They said, no, you shouldn't put your body under that much stress going into the surgery. But I needed to get away from all of this talk of having surgery, and I just needed to focus on something else other than the surgery. And so I felt like it was a good idea for me to go to Beijing and compete.
So you used the World Championships as a distraction?
Exactly.
And is it right, Ari, that it's your sister who donated the kidney?
Yes, my sister LaToya, she gave me her kidney.
Wow. And how is she now?
She's fine. She's it's funny, I just talked to her a couple of hours ago. She is on her way to the movies with her little girl, her daughter, who's only 1.5 years old. So
how do you have a conversation like that with your sister?
With a conversation of, I need a kidney, can you give me one?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Yes. What about sharing your kidneys?
Yeah. Yeah, well, it wasn't even a matter of me having a conversation. When I told her the story that I needed to have a transplant, she immediately said, okay, I'm going to get tested to see if I'm a match. Wow. And that was the conversation.
And
it
how
was
are you,
pretty straightforward.
And how are you feeling now?
I feel great now. I've actually started back training. So I've been training for about 2 weeks now. And I could see a tremendous amount of difference in the way I recover. Because before, it would take me, like, say I did a 30-second run or a 25-second run in the grass. It would take me almost 6 to 8 minutes to recover from one effort. And now I can recover in 2 minutes. So that's a significant amount of time difference when it comes to recovery. And I can also have protein now. Before, I couldn't have protein at all. So I was very limited in what I could eat and what I could consume because I was on a lot of restrictions dietary-wise. I couldn't have any potassium. Too much potassium is too rough on the remaining kidney function I had. And protein is obviously very rough on the kidneys to digest and to filter out. So I couldn't have a lot of protein. And I was incredibly thin last year. Very, very thin. Yeah, and this year I don't have protein, so.
Listen, it's great to hear you sounding so well. And best of luck with the recovery, Aries. And lovely to talk to you.
On digital and online.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
bbc.co.uk/5live.